Hello and welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast with me, your host Jordan. This week on the pod, I'm joined by a couple of Arsenal fans, Tim Stillman, columnist from the Arse blog. What are you saying, mate?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. All good.
Cheers for coming back on the pod, mate.
Pleasure.
Also, Simeon, what are you saying?
I'm all right, man.
You good?
Not too bad, you know, because my team are champions. Overstand. The only other team I recognise are champions.
Okay.
The women's football team.
Right. Cheer.
Okay.
Who said we're awful?
Okay.
Big up my team.
All right. Big up your team still. Cool. Nice one.
I mean, I'd have to watch him to big him up.
We've also got a couple of Man United fans on the pod here. Josh and Marvin, what are you saying?
Well, it is what it is, Jordan. Let's just get the season over and done with, mate.
Let's wrap it up.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Josh? Simeon's celebrating women's football. Credit to Arsenal women's football team. But I just want the season to be over as quickly as possible.
Josh?
I'm with Marv, man. Like, the season just needs to just come and go. Although, Man United's women's team did win the championship.
You did. You got promoted, to be fair.
I'm not really going to celebrate that.
Okay, fair enough.
That's a first season as a professional team, though, right?
Yeah.
That's impressive for them. Well done, them.
I mean, they were the best team in that league with the biggest budget by like a mile. So they should have. It's like Man City being the championship.
Yeah, but they did walk it. So,
you know. Okay. So, Jude, what, you don't want to congratulate
them?
No,
I'm just saying, you know, it was. Anyway,
all right, we'll come in for your title next season.
This, right? I don't know about that.
Is that where we're going now? We're so fed up. That's where the trash talk's going to be.
That's for another week.
I'm up for that.
On the pod this week, we're talking about Man United and Arsenal, asking the question, who has the bigger overhaul ahead of them this summer? We'll also have some Everton chat later as well. And we're also going to talk about Portugal and the nation's contribution to modern day football. Getting some drive-bys, guys, on the rules by now. Get 1 minute and 1 minute more. I will be cutting people off after 59 seconds, so keep it tight. And the only rule is you cannot be interrupted by anybody else on the panel. Marvin, let's start with you. Am I the only person who thinks that Pontus Janssen of Leeds United was the only person on job on Goalgate?
I guess on job is a bit ambiguous. Like, he just wasn't having it, right? I'm with you, because I've got this feeling Leeds aren't going to go up now. And I think he just realised, if I don't forget what the manager says, if I don't do something here, I'm going to be in this terrible league
again
for another season. And I think he just lost his head. Because if you look at it, he was trying to negotiate before they took the kickoff.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he went over to the dugout and he was like, oh, come on, man. Like, some of this stuff happens. We've been the better team, sort of thing. And then Everton was like, score. Yeah, let them score. And everyone was like, okay. You sort of just... I mean, I think what's more embarrassing is that guy didn't expect to be tackled and he still didn't tackle him. But no, I get where he's coming from, but manager's orders are manager's orders.
Josh, if you had to pick one of these three strikers, you have to play one of these strikers for 38 games next season. Who are you taking? Troy Deeney, Ashley Barnes, or Gonzalo Higuain?
Oh, wow. That's not hard, though. Because Higuain's
Okay, wow. I was going to say it's kind of hard.
He scored four goals this season, two of them against Huddersfield, one against Fulham, one against Burnley. Rubbish. Ashley Barnes, he puts himself about a bit. And what was the other one? I'll probably go with Troy Deeney and play two up front, because I think Troy Deeney could be a good foil for another striker.
So you think in a two, Deeney will be better, more effective than Barnes?
I just like Deeney more. I'm not going to sit here and say I've watched them and I've studied them and I know the difference between two. I just like Deeney more. So Barnes is good as well. Higuain's rubbish. He's bomb.
Yikes. Okay. Tim, can you see Hasenhüttl matching Southampton's highest place finish of seventh next season?
I reckon he's got a really good chance, actually. Like, Southampton, they've done something quite interesting after a couple of appointments where they seem to have lost their way a little bit. They've actually appointed someone who seems to have, like, an idea of how to play. And, yeah, I mean, like, he's got them out of relegation trouble pretty easily this year. And I reckon if he'd had a full season, that's where Southampton might be. Mm-hmm. They might be in that kind of area of the league. I don't think he'll get them to seventh, because I think Wolves pretty much got that on lockdown probably next season as well, and then Wolves will look to make a little jump. But I reckon Southampton will be in that area of the league, unless he impresses so much that one of the top six needs a manager and they look towards him. But I reckon he's got a shot, but I don't think he'll quite get seventh in 1 year.
Okay, and finally, Simeon, should we, as in the other top teams in the league, be concerned about City winning the league last year with a lead of 100 point plus total, and this year potentially coming above a team that only loses one game all season?
I mean,
season are over just yet. So
It's not, but I'm presuming they get the job done.
Yeah, I'm not presuming that they get the job done.
Well, I'm presuming. If they win the league this year, if Liverpool haven't only lost one game this season, last year they got over 100 points. The next couple of years looks kind of scary.
I think that last year, the fact that they won it so easily in this year, where I mean, we were seeing a title fight, that basically shows progress for me. I think the league is quite competitive, other than that top tier. But the truth is that United had the resources. Chelsea obviously going through that kind of tiff with Abramovich, but theoretically they've got the resources. I mean, I don't know. I don't feel like I'm worried about competition in the Premier League overall, to be honest with you. And I feel like this season shows progress.
Okay, so you don't think it's looking like it's going to be a wrap again?
I don't think City will win the league.
Next year?
This year.
This year. Wow, okay. Fair enough. Let's get into our first chat, guys. Let's talk Arsenal United. I'm wondering, guys, there's been word that's been used a lot of the last few weeks about overhaul. In the last 2 weeks, I'm hearing from both fan bases that they probably, if they could, lose literally 80% of the personnel at both the squads. And I'm just wondering, obviously that's not going to happen in one swoop, but I'm just wondering who has the bigger job going forward if we start with this summer. Josh, let's all start with United first and then we'll get to Arsenal. Mm-hmm. On that question, first of all, who do you think's got the bigger job? And secondly, is Ole the guy, do you think, to get United at least back on track to becoming a competitive team next season?
Who's got the bigger job out of Arsenal and United? Mm-hmm. I think you have to look at the expectations to answer that question. I think the expectations are hugely more bigger on United's side. I think United are always looked upon to be a team that challenges for the title. I don't think they're going to get anywhere near challenge for the title next season, but I don't think Arsenal will either. But I just think the expectations are so huge at United that they are going to have... They have the bigger job. And I actually think that they don't have the... Whereas I think Arsenal have done some work to put a structure in place, I don't think United have done any work to put any sort of structure in place. So I feel like they have the bigger task. Is Ole the right man for the job? I don't think Ole's going to... I don't see anything in Ole that tells me he's going to be able to take United to win a title. Mm. Will we be better than what we were this season? Probably, mm-hmm. right? Because I don't think we can get that much worse than what we were this season. And I feel like there's a way he wants to play, and I feel like if he gets the squad to a level of fitness and we improve the players in the squad, we'll probably be able to play that football, but it'll be better than this season. We'll probably win more games in this season. But I don't see us challenging for a title or even pushing for even third place, for instance. So
it's a top four fight for United.
So I feel like the appointment was premature. Mm. I feel like I don't understand why they did it when they did it. I don't see any reason why they had to make the appointment when they did. But if there wasn't a manager out there to get, then it is an option to keep Ole for another year until they find the right manager. But yeah, I'm not looking forward to the summer. I think we're in disarray because I feel like the club, when they sacked Jose, said the right things in terms of we need to change the structure, we need to bring in a director of football, we need to change our recruitment policy, all of this kind of stuff that they said, which we are coming towards the summer, and I don't see any of that being implemented. So I'm worried.
Marvin, it might sound a bit brutal.
Oh, geez.
It might sound a bit brutal.
Let's have it.
But do United, if they're serious about beginning this restructuring that Josh has just mentioned there, need to really look at what they've done by appointing Ole and pull the trigger on him, this summer and decide we're going to try and get someone in who's a bit more proven, who's a bit more established, with a bit more experience of turning around the job ahead?
Oh, when you said you were going to be brutal, I thought you were going to say, confirm Ashley Young for a second another year of captaincy.
That'd be rude, not brutal. Yeah.
I guess it's two things, right? To Josh's point, I wouldn't have given him the job. Definitely not at the time that we gave him the job in the first place. But I think now, to hit on Josh's point about disarray, I think if now they pull the trigger on Ole, it just confirms what everybody's saying, that they haven't got a Scooby what they're doing. To appoint a man And then to fire him a few months later would really demonstrate a lack of leadership and direction.
Even if it's for the greater good.
Even if it's for the greater good, I think they care more about the optics and what the stock price does. It would show some real issues with the leadership. And I know the Glazers don't really give a shit, but even the Glazers would look at that and think, you've just sold us on this guy. And now you're pulling the trigger. Like, what on earth is going on there, right? So I don't think they will do it. But I think it would be, great. I'd be really happy. I never wanted him in the first place. And I now really struggle to everything Josh has said. I really struggle to see how, especially with the director of football still hanging in the balance, how, what the direction of my club is. Like, I can't say with confidence that we're going to be anywhere near the title next year, the year after, and even the year after that. And I think it would be really refreshing to get a new manager in who doesn't have had to have won it all, but has to have a reputation and then also be fearless in pulling the trigger on some players that might be great somewhere else, but just aren't cutting it for the club and the expectations and standards that we want. So I think it'd be great to do it, but I just think from an optics perspective, I think it would actually sign the death warrant of some of the people making the appointments if they did it now.
Well, can I jump in there?
Quickly,
because I feel like with the whole restructuring and like recruitment and overhaul, there's too much emphasis being put on the manager. And I feel like it's been seen at United that the manager isn't the issue.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with that. But I'm just wondering if once you do get your house in order, is he the person to move that forward?
Put it like this. If United sacked Ole, end of the season, and they hired Max Allegri, I still don't think we'll win the title in 3 years.
But the other thing that I'd say is, and I haven't seen the details of it yet, but because Ole's such a cheap date, right, as far as managers go, I'd be really surprised if he hits us on the numbers for a sacking anyway. Like, we'd probably say, we'll sack you, and the compensation is you get a season ticket. Do you know what I mean? Like, it wouldn't surprise me if he's got a really dead contract. So actually, from a financial hit, whereas, you know, rumours are that we only stopped paying David Moyes the other day and ridiculous stuff like that. Yeah. I don't think Ole would be costly. So, I mean, if there is one guy that you sort of pull the trigger on and go, look, we made a mistake here. Like, he's probably the guy to do it. But don't do it unless we really know who the guy is, right? I'd be really devastated if they then sack Ole and then we go through this summer of unknown trying to get and scramble around and then end up with like who I like really a lot, but like an Ancelotti, like another person that they just get in to steady the ship. Like, we need someone that... We need an Ole type character who's young, who can really build something, but just someone better than Ole, right? It's simple as that.
But who? That's.
Yeah, no, I know it's tricky. I mean, it's funny because I know Allegri isn't young, but you know, I've been a fan of him for ages. But what I'm saying is, and I know, like, I've criticized it a million times, but if you're gonna pull the trigger on Ole, like, you've got to have been flirting ridiculously with whoever comes in. What I don't want is to Jordan's point, I don't want us to just pull the trigger and then go, right now, let's go and find the guy. Yeah. Like, you've basically got to have him out for a few dinners already to make it happen.
Simeon, what's the single biggest thing that you think United need to do this summer? What's the first thing, sorry, this summer, what do you think is the first thing that they should be addressing in trying to get this restructure back on the road?
I mean, I guess for United, the criticism has largely been around their defence and sorting that out. Because personally, I feel like, offensively, I feel like they're quite strong. And I look at their squad, and there's a lot of players in that team that I would take. A lot of them are off form, but I feel like there are moments in this season where, you know, the Pogbas are playing, the Martials are playing, to a lesser extent, but Pogba's playing, they had Radford sparkling at moments. So I feel like there's a lot of talent in that squad, to be honest with you, offensively. I just feel like defensively they look problematic, and also I think a lot of it comes down to just coaching and management, and I think that's a big thing with Arsenal as well. So I feel like there needs to be a greater emphasis on basically just literal coaching, and a lot and the central defence and the wingers, or the wing backs, I should say, that whole area there just looks like it needs a whole gutting, to be honest with you.
Tim, I watched the game yesterday against Chelsea, and I heard a lot of people, and they were kind of analysing it in the studio on Sky, and they were saying how United in the first half were really, really good, and this is the United we want. Mm. I'm thinking, am I missing something here? United were the better team for maybe half an hour. am I being a bit harsh again, or were United really that good, or is that just how low the bar has dropped now?
Yeah.
I thought people were going a little bit over the top in terms of how good, inverted commas, United were.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think there's a little bit of expectations, particularly with like the run of form at the moment, that people don't expect a lot. And you know, obviously with Man United, if Man United are average, then Man United are terrible. And so you watch Man United when they've been average or bad for a few games and you expect like something awful. But like you said, Simeon, like there is a lot of talent in that team. And I'm telling you, like some of those Man City players, if they weren't coached by Guardiola, if they were coached by someone else, people would be like, oh, they're rubbish. Like, people wouldn't like John Stones and, you know, Fabian Delph and even someone like Gundogan if they weren't coached by Guardiola. I don't think they're, like, superb players, but they're coached well and they're coached into a system. And I think you're right. I think United have got a lot of players where, let's say they were coached by Guardiola tomorrow, that would you'd get a lot more out of them.
But to be fair, a lot of those players you both are talking about have kind of gone through three, maybe four managers now, and they've not shown any kind of run of consistency. So talent, no. I don't think the talent that someone like Martial has is in question. But has he got the ability to be a top player and carry that out for 10, 15, 20 games? We've just not seen that. So not how yet. Good is he?
Yeah, and it's difficult to evaluate someone like him. I think someone like Pogba, it's just like if Pogba wasn't playing with Matic and Herrera, Pogba's a really top-class player. You watch Pogba play for France and he's surrounded by top-class talent. And I think he's one of those players who needs top-class talent around him. And then if you get, you know, slightly better players than like Ashley Young and Chris Smalling and Matic and Herrera, then I think you get a lot more out of someone like Martial. For example, who, look, speaking as an Arsenal fan, if you offered me Martial, I'd take him tomorrow.
I would have said that last year. I'm not sure.
But you see, this is the crux. Like, I've been sitting here biting my tongue, man, because like I don't know what you man are seeing offensively, but we are dire.
But is that because they're not good or because as they say,
what you said, right? These guys have had a chance under three managers. Martial's a great example.
Who are managers?
Yeah.
Doesn't well, LVG, right? Top class. Jose, records better than anything Arsenal's ever seen. And let's not talk about Ole.
Look at Mourinho's record when it comes to creative play. Mourinho is a systematic coach.
Martial can't get in the France team.
France team is formidable. I mean, you're talking about champions here. Come on, show some respect.
No, all right.
Oh, France. Look at those. We've seen Martial sparkle. I mean,
but that's the thing, Simeon. That's that you're seeing glimmers, and I think at that level, for the money that these guys are demanding, right? I don't think it's a good enough thing to say, well, they've just been managed poorly, right? Because like, and Pogba's a great example because clearly he can turn it on when he wants to, and so can Martial. Because when Solskjaer came and the bounce happened, you saw those glimmers. Same with Rashford, those glimmers and those sparkles you're seeing. But I just feel at the level and at the cash and the way they're playing, like Martial has made runs where he has just run down a rabbit hole. And Lukaku might have the worst first touch of any number nine in the league, including Tubby Higuain, right? So I hear what you're saying, and I agree there's talent, and I agree that the defence needs some work. But if I, to the question that Jord asked you about what the first thing I'd do, the first thing I'd do would be sit down a lot of the players who want the big money and say, if you want to go, let me know and we'll sell you right now, right? Yeah, let's start from the bottom. If you don't want to be here, I'm comfortable with that.
That's management, though, isn't it?
That's management. But you're saying, you pulled out my boy Chris Smalling. Like, Chris Smalling can stay there and be a squad player, right? As far as centre-backs go, like, he's not great, but he's not one of the people I'd look at replacing straight away.
When you got Marcus Rojo
like,
in the squad.
Is that, we got to take it. Like, I actually think, like, this season aside, where we've really struggled with clean sheets, defensively, we've got by, right? We've not been great, but we've been a lot better than Arsenal and a lot of other teams. But offensively, and I think maybe it's glory day syndrome here, but I watch us and I don't know where the next goal's coming from. I don't know tactically how we're going to do it. There is, as you said, little glimmers, but I haven't seen us this season put sort of 90 minutes of continuous pressure on a team. Even when Ole did get his bounce, we haven't been at it from the from 0 to 90 minutes ever with attacking flair or anything. And I get it, players are playing within themselves, but that's the first thing I would do, is I'd get rid of some of the highly paid, not performing consistently players in that team.
So Pogba was mentioned, Josh, earlier on. I think he probably epitomises the kind of what's going on here. Talented player versus the output of what he's actually doing.
He had a good season.
No,
though,
I don't think he does. Yeah. I think you're wrong.
Go on.
I think Paul Pogba's had a good season. Mm.
I agree.
I knew we would get there.
Hold on.
I knew this was all going to come back to Pogba.
Hold on. Paul Pogba's had a good season if you talk about output, which is what he said. Mm-hmm. He is, I think, got 13 league goals from midfield. Mm-hmm. And I think he's got 9 assists. Mm-hmm. So from a central midfielder, what more do you want, right? In terms of output, in terms of numbers, and he creates the most chances as a team. He creates one of the most chances in the league from his position. So from what he was brought into the team to do, which is to add creativity, because when we was under LVG before Jose came, we had no creativity in that team whatsoever. So he's added that, right? Mm. But Pogba can't be the creative player, also be the defensive midfielder when Matic is basically not doing anything, not doing his job, like he's on holiday. And then he can't score the goals because when he's putting in a plate for Lukaku or Rashford, they can't finish, right? So when we talk about like attacking talent, to my point, Martial, I would say, is the one player who, when Ole came in, didn't get that uptick from it. I think Martial, when Ole came, Martial was playing well under Jose. Mm. And then he regressed under Ole, in my opinion. And the reason why he regressed, because Ole, when he came in, he implemented a high pressing system from the front. So the front players had to press. And Martial doesn't do that. Mm. Like, he doesn't want to run around. He's an economic player, right? Mm-hmm. He wants the ball to feet. Just watch him.
No, he stays on the wing.
Yeah. He wants the ball to feet.
Give him the ball and I'll make something happen.
Then he'll make something happen. Mm. He hardly ever makes runs off the ball unless he plays centre forward. And when he does that, he doesn't press. So that's probably the reason why he was on the bench against Chelsea and didn't even get off the bench. And then, so one of the things that you have to look at as well is that there's this thing about the whole dead cat bounce, and you know, there was a bounce on Ole. But one of the things that people like don't seem to speak about a lot is the change in tactical approach. The change in tactical approach was to be high tempo, high energy, high pressing, which you can't sustain throughout a season without having a certain level of fitness. And even through that run of games when we were winning, when you took players like Lingard out and put Sanchez in, or you took Rashford out and put Lukaku in, you could see straight away that we were a worse team. Just because Sanchez don't have the legs, Lukaku doesn't have any movement up front, and so Pogba can't find him. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you put Rashford up front, he's not a great finisher, but he's had so much mover, it makes Pogba look even better because he can find him with the passes. So that happened, and then you had the drop-off where I think we had a game, I don't remember who was playing, and we had 3 hamstring injuries in
Liverpool
in one game, right?
Not Liverpool. It was
PSG?
It was Liverpool.
Yeah, when Klopp said that's right. Yeah.
So ever since then, we regressed back. We said, okay, we're not going to do this pressing thing because obviously, fitness-wise, we can't handle it. Same thing happened with Klopp when he first went to Liverpool.
Yeah.
The same thing happened with Poch when he was first at Spurs. Spurs couldn't maintain the way they played throughout the season because of the high pressing energy, and they need to build up their fitness. So I think some people do a little bit of a disservice to... I'm not saying Ole's a great manager, by the way, but they do him a little bit of a disservice by not mentioning that, because that's a clear tactical change that was made. Even the first 10 minutes against Chelsea or 15 minutes against Chelsea...
You were on it.
The other day, it was high pressing. Mm. And
that's
then we dropped
Lukaku
off.
Was out of breath after 10 minutes.
So. That's why he was out of breath after 20 minutes.
So just going back to Pogba, considering we all agree he's a good player, do you keep him? Or do you realise...
Because I haven't heard
you
say that.
No, I do think he's a good player, but I don't think... this is my question. It's all well and good, all green, he's a good player. Is it working at United?
I don't see how you can get rid of Pogba.
Yeah.
Pogba's output has been better than Paul Scholes' output in every single season, bar one.
So I know that you're a guy that doesn't think Paul Scholes is a legendary Premier League midfielder.
I mean, I wouldn't put it like that.
Well, you did.
I wouldn't put it like that.
And you compared Pogba to Scholes.
What I'm saying, right, is that the difference is this. people are looking at Paul Pogba to carry this United side, when actually Paul Scholes never had the pressure to carry United because he's playing alongside some world-class players in a world-class team, one of the greatest teams in football history. So you have this player now who people are criticising when his output is absolutely phenomenal this season. You know, 13 goals, numerous assists, had moments where he's absolutely sparkled, been the best player on the pitch, is in the PFA team of the year. And I'm looking at this player and I'm like, people are actually having a debate over whether they should get rid of
why,
him.
I tell you why. Because I'm trying to move this forward in terms of, if you keep Paul Pogba, you've all agreed, you've got to give him the platform to let him do his thing.
Yeah.
Are they going to do that?
That's the whole point.
Well, it does matter because you're not going to do it. You might as well move him on.
I tell you why it doesn't matter. Because in the United squad in midfield, you have Fred.
Yeah.
You have Ander Herrera.
Yeah.
You have Nemanja Matic.
Yeah.
You have Paul Pogba. You have Scott McTominay.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And Andres Pereira.
Mm-hmm.
The only two players there that should be playing for Man United are Paul Pogba and Ander Herrera. The rest of them can go. Okay. Scott McTominay, all right, he's a young player, so we can keep him and see how he progresses. But the rest of them, Matic has been the worst player this season at Manchester United, and not a word is being said. £50 million central midfielder.
But my point,
not doing his defensive job.
But my point is, and this leads to my next question: most teams don't chuck out eight players in one go. So if we accept that you might bring in three new players in your 11 next year,
yeah,
right. One of those players is going to be a right back.
No,
it's going to be a right back more than likely. Like, yeah,
buy a right winger, buy a right back, and replace Matic, and tie Herrera down.
And we'll see the best out of Paul Pogba.
Tie Herrera down. But he's, to a contract.
But he's pretty much gone from
the road. No, but this is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Like, if we had a DM, right, to talk about our central defensive problems, actually, our central defensive problems come from the fact that we don't have a defensive midfielder who does their job. Our defence is if we bought Virgil van Dijk, right, I'm going to say this now. Mm. Even if we bought Virgil van Dijk and put him in United defence, he wouldn't look as good because we get exposed. The fullbacks don't do their jobs, right? Ashley Young and to a lesser extent, sure. But Ashley Young, right, in the last 3 months, is responsible for about 5 goals that we've conceded by himself. By himself.
Yeah, so my question is,
right,
three players you're going to buy this summer.
You need a right back and a defensive mid and a right wing.
And we'll see the best of Paul Pogba.
You will see a better Paul Pogba.
But the best of Paul Pogba. Going back to Marvin's point about the money that he's commanding.
It doesn't matter about the best because I've already said he's had a good season. A better season than this season is an improvement and an even better season, right? This is what I'm saying. We don't, like, Paul Pogba is not a Messi. We can't expect him to be Messi. We can't expect him to be Cristiano Ronaldo. Mm. He's not an attacking player. Mm. Hazard has the same problem at Chelsea. Chelsea expect Hazard to carry the team. Hazard has a fantastic season this season. If you look at his stats and what he's done, no one talks about him saying he's had a fantastic season.
But the thing is, there's two things to that. First of all, I really didn't like the scores comparison, Simeon.
Yeah,
I thought it was bang out
terrible.
Of order. Yeah. And you know what?
It needs to be made.
But you almost disproved your own point because you said he's in a team of world-class other players. So he doesn't have to have the output that Pogba's currently thinking.
And he never did. It gets spread around.
I just think it was bang out of order. Like, I'm just the thing is, mate, I sat here and I pinched my own leg.
No, but they're different.
No, the irony is, you go back to that 99 team, yeah, you look at the stats, yeah, Beckham doing the madness on assists. You look at the forwards doing the madness on numbers. You look at Paul Scholes, I don't know, 5 goals and 4 assists. You're thinking, eh? And this is the guy people are revering, whilst at the same time taking their big lips to go and cast Paul Scholes. I mean, Paul Pogba, who's carrying the team now.
So these guys aren't casting Paul Pogba, but you're saying the people out there who are casting Paul Pogba at the same time are praising Paul Scholes.
That's my point, right? And then you got all these people come out and they're like, oh, he's no Paul Scholes. And he's like, well, it's actually better. So, I mean,
no,
like,
he's not. He is no Paul. Do I say he's no Paul Scholes, right? And I'm not even saying Pogba's not a good player. I think he's a fantastic player. But he is a very different player. But he's no Paul Scholes because Pogba cannot control the midfield. If you watch Modric, right? Modric also doesn't get a lot of goals and assists. But Modric has, like, the last three seasons, not this season, but the last three seasons, has been the best central midfielder on the planet.
Mm.
Not because of goals and assists, but because he runs games. Paul Scholes ran football games.
I think with Pogba as well, because the team around him isn't all that, there's so much focus on what he can't do rather than what he can. And like you say about Modric, in like a really poor team, people would be like, well, Modric doesn't score goals. He doesn't get assists.
Yeah.
People would say that about any number. Like,
Iniesta
what would people
didn't
have
get
said?
Mad numbers
yeah,
either.
Yeah, yeah, or Xavi. Like, people would say, oh, yeah, Xavi passes the ball around. That's that's fine.
It'll be like Jorginho at Chelsea.
But yeah, but you're right. There is this like unreal expectation on Pogba to like, you know, to both stop goals and score goals and create goals all at the same time. And you're right, like, there's only about three players in the world who can actually do that.
And none of them are sentiments.
And I feel like Ronaldo and Messi have just set this, like, bar so high that the players just below them, it's like, well, what do they do?
And part of it is the price tag, right? Like, it was big money, so people want him to do everything that you said in terms of, like, score goals, stop him, this, that and the other. But what I'll say is, and I still can't get my head around it, and Josh and I have had conversations, is there a bit of a media witch hunt on this, right? Because when I see, like, if I look at the press and sort of the coverage and the stats, you know, he's run the least, he's done all of this, I sometimes feel like I've not seen those stats of anyone else, right? And I've seen pretty much, I'd say, every day, and I don't, it could be, like, you guys could say his agent's engineering all of this, but every day I'm opening it and he's, you know, he's going to Real to the point where, because I know some of you guys in the media, I know that you guys just make shit up, right? But it's one of those things.
You're looking at me when you say that. I'm not particularly happy
about
that.
It was deliberate. And it gets to the point where I think if I'm an average Joe who does gullible, trust the media, right? It gets to a point where the backdrop is now, look at these stats and he's trying to get away. Let's just get rid of him and he wants to get away. Let's not keep him, right? So I do feel like, there is a bit of an undercurrent personally where I just feel like, are we having this conversation because every day we're seeing a Paul Pogba transfer rumour or a stat?
But isn't there also a sense of he's your star player? When you're the star player, you get criticised more than everybody else.
I don't know. Like, that comes Aubameyang is your top scorer. Mm. I think is he your most expensive player? 50-something million?
Yeah.
I'm not seeing and I feel like he's had some terrible games for you where he's been invisible. Mm. I'm seeing nowhere. And I know United are a bigger team, like a much bigger team.
I mean, I guess he doesn't have the profile.
But I think the profile is all predicated on the fact that he is a big character, and as a result, it's almost like, let's tear this bastard down a little bit, right? If he leaves, it won't be we've lost potentially one of the greatest talents of his era. It will be this guy just couldn't cut it. He was the worst, one of the worst signings.
I guess our equivalent would be Ozil, who I don't think is a bad player, and I think he's actually come through and been a good player for us this season, to be honest with you. So, I mean, I don't know.
I disagree with that, but we'll get to Ozil. we'll get to Ozil in a minute.
I just feel like our conversations of football are just so driven by emotion and irrationality and a misunderstanding of what the different components are meant to do and how to improve it. In my opinion, regardless of what field it is, if someone is talent and you're not getting the best out of that, that is always a management and a HR issue. These are facts.
But the counterpoint to that is, while I agree, is Paul Pogba getting the best out of himself?
Yes, he is.
Is he doing the best that he could do? Because I'm a person that I hate wasted talent. I think Paul Pogba could do this. Paul Pogba currently, for me, is there. I mean, now, if that's the management issue, maybe.
Well, first of all,
but he can't just say, oh, it's Jose's fault. Jose's not there anymore.
Football is a team game, innit? You know what I'm saying? Other than, as these men have mentioned, I don't need to repeat it, Messi and Ronaldo, it's a team game. Mm. What you can do is literally related to what your team can do. Because if man's not making the runs, you can't hit the pass. I feel like he's had a great season. He's in the PFA Team of the Year. That's just right.
And you think he should have been in the team?
I think he should have been in the team.
I think him and Fernandinho in centre mid.
I mean, I'm looking to listen to what you're saying, and I agree with a lot of it. But the one thing that really gets me is when you say footballs are based on emotion. Of course, it's based on emotion.
What I'm saying is that is disrupting our ability to be rational about understanding
what he's meant to be doing,
what he's done, his outcome, and basically assessing basically his form and what he's done this season.
Everything about Paul Pogba since he joined United has been irrational. Even the expectation, before he even kicked the ball, people were saying they're expecting him to score 20 goals a season from centre mid. From central midfield. Like, what is that?
I
also think with Pogba, there's this sense like people feel like, you know, they need to take him down a peg or two or something, because, you know, there's like the unveiling video with the signing and all of that, and people are like, oh, this guy thinks he's, you know, this guy thinks he's the shit. And yeah. Like, oh, you know, and I think people almost take offence to that.
Yeah,
with Pogba.
Yeah. There's a lot
they
of
think he's a bit of like a showman.
I just got one more question on United. I'm glad I've given you guys a chance to defend Paul Pogba because a lot of people are like, oh, there's only one agenda on Paul Pogba, and you guys have put forward the defence. So fair play. Take it away from the players and the manager now. Just final question on United. Are United failing in terms of not getting the best in hierarchical positions? So, for me, if United are meant to be the biggest football club in football, why are they not getting the best scouts, the best director of football out there, the best manager for the job? And that kind of goes back to my first question about Solskjaer. Why are United not getting the best in every area if they are the biggest? McDonald's, for example. McDonald's probably have the best recruitment department in the fast food industry. They have the best worst food in the fast food industry. Why are United not getting the best in all departments to make sure that they can fulfill their tag of being the biggest club in the world?
Well, last time I was on, we talked about Ole. When it comes down to the best, I think with Ole, it was a fan favourite, yeah, sentimental, easy option, right? They didn't have to go out and court someone, a big name, for instance, to get it done. And I think if it all blows up in our faces, which it might do, you know, the board can turn around and say, you wanted Ole. Ole's at the wheel. We gave him the car. And, like, this is what happened, right? I think the other stuff is a bit more of a conversation, because if you look at Woodward, for instance, he was a fantastic commercial director. He got money in. I think he signed a deal for DHL with our training kits that was worth more than, like, 40% of the Premier League on their own shirts, right? That's good business. Mm. But I don't think that necessarily means he was ready to do the job he's now doing, right? And I think sometimes you can't just say, oh, he did well there, so he can do this here. I think actually what we should have done is really survey the field and work out who can come in and get this job done right. The director of football, I think I personally feel, and it's the same for Arsenal, I know things change, but the director of football for United, for me, was a bit of an anomaly because Fergie ran stuff, right? Like, it was as simple as that. Because in a way, with Fergie, United were in this bubble of we didn't need one, whereas the world was changing. People were coming in here, there, and everywhere. And then he left, and then we were like, ah, but Moyes is Scottish, he can still do it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's in the same blueprint. And actually, that's not the case at all. So, in a way, Fergie was like a gift and a curse, where the world outside of the United bubble developed, but our infrastructure stagnated under him.
And
now we're playing catch-up, yeah.
Let's move on now to Arsenal. I'll start with you, Tim. I'll ask you the same first question. Who do you think of the two clubs have the bigger summer ahead of them, the bigger overhaul?
That's a really interesting... I think there's kind of two things to this. I think United have got the furthest to go.
To reach their objectives.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because United look like they're going to finish sixth probably at this stage, and United want to be first, and that's a bigger jump, whereas Arsenal look like they're going to finish fifth, and really they're aiming for fourth or third. Yeah. So they've got like, and they're actually in the mix for the top four, and it's kind of the way things have happened. If you'd have told most Arsenal fans in August that with like two games to go, you know, you're a couple of points off the top four and in the semi-final of the Europa League, I think most Arsenal fans would be like, okay, I'll take that. But because we've lost the last three games at the time of recording, it's a bit like, well, we had the top four and we've kind of blown it. And that makes things a little bit different. But I think the two clubs are in really similar positions. They've got really similar squad players, like the conversation we've just had. They've got tons of inconsistent players. And, you know, it's kind of ironic.
Inconsistent or just not good enough?
Some not good enough, but a lot. Like, it's kind of ironic we picked up Mkhitaryan from Man United, who is possibly the most inconsistent player I've ever seen.
I disagree. I think he's consistently bad.
I think
he's actually consistently bad.
I think he has really, really good games. And
really?
Yeah.
I've not seen one game where he's had
you're
one.
Mad. You're mad, man.
You're lying.
Am I alone there, Marvin? Have you seen one good game?
I think he's our third highest goal scorer.
That's not saying much, is it?
I don't know.
He has had some good games, man. Come on.
And I think the thing is, actually, like on a good day,
wow,
he really fits what Emery wants to do, and he's one of the few players that does. Drops some like one out of tens Sunday,
like
being
yesterday,
one of them.
Yeah.
And then like Kolasinac and Xhaka, these are players who just like veer wildly between like looking quite good and then looking absolutely dreadful. And we've got a lot of players like that to turn over. I think.
I'll let you finish. But that kind of goes back to my initial point: is that are they good then, or are they just really crap players who can put in two really good games and then they revert back to actually we're not very good.
I mean, the bottom line is they're not good enough either way. So it's all the same. It's all the same conclusion really. But I think the thing is with Arsenal, like Man United have got money, and money solves problems. Now, if Man U get a good director of football and they can use that money properly, I think they can travel more quickly. Whereas Arsenal are looking at quite a big... Like, Arsenal, I think, have got a bigger job over the next 3 years. Whereas United, I think, potentially, if they're clever, could, like, in 2 years, move quite quickly if they get a good manager. And it might not be Ole, or he might turn out to be a really good manager. Good director of football. You get the structure in place at United, they've got the money.
It's good to go.
Arsenal, we've tried to get that structure in place and we've actually tried to do some things like Sven Mislintat, and you can see what they were trying to do and it didn't work. And I think that might go on for a few years. I think you might see, like, we need a director of football as well. We need someone like handling transfers because that's not gone.
Isn't Edu right. apparently the guy but, that's rumoured to come in?
Yeah, but we're further down that line because we're doing a bit of trial and error. But I reckon United this summer is probably bigger than Arsenal this summer. But over the next 3 years, I think Arsenal have got a bigger job than Man U.
Simeon, is Arsenal's bigger problem, something I've been banging on for since Emery was appointed, is the bigger problem than personnel in and out changing the culture of the club? We're still in the residue of the Wenger loserism. And until we get rid of that, it doesn't really matter what players you have. You need to change the culture of Arsenal Football Club. Is that a bigger challenge than just getting a handful of crap players out?
Yeah, I mean, I guess... I remember when... Wenger had that kind of strict, we're going for youth policy. Mm. And he started tearing at man like Gilberto, man that had won it. Mm. And he brought in players that were very, very talented, but never won anything with us because we never quite had that mentality. So I feel like, I mean, we're just not a championship contending side or club, or more worryingly, club, to be honest with you. I mean, United, there's still expectation, even though, they're not really that guy, you know what I mean? And they're probably not going to be that guy. But the expectation's still there. And they've got people who've actually got the medals on the table. So, I mean,
They're hanging on to some level of being winners.
There's pride. Yeah. I think with us now, I don't know, we just don't have that. And I think that's problematic, to be honest with you. But I think for me, I just want to see some leadership, to be honest with you. Our transfer policies over the past 4 years, 5 years, have just been so random. Mm. People said we haven't had money. We've spunked money like no one's business on... Mm. Players who were not good enough in terms of their wages, and then on players who we bought as like stopgaps, you know, 10 million here, 5 million there, and then more expensive stuff as well. And then I just feel like actually we need some clear leadership to kind of think, okay, so what is our plan going forward in terms of bringing players through? Where are we getting them from? Wenger had a comparative advantage when he first came in with knowing the French market at a time when French talent was the best talent. So when that gap now, when that advantage doesn't exist now, what are you going to do next? And I feel like with us, we have an ageing squad. You know, Mkhitaryan 30, Ozil 30, Aubameyang approaching 30, central defenders, Shelby, you know, past it. I mean, we are a very, very old team and an expensive team at that as well. And then you have the fact that the irony is that our recent decline of the last few games has actually come with the kind of injury to kind of Aaron Ramsey, and then kind of some moving out of the team of Socrates. So I feel like, you know, the fact that Ramsey's not going to be there next year should be one of his biggest worries, because actually he's one of the few players who plays in the way that he wants our team to play, in terms of the press and then the pace and the break and the movement and the ability to kind of both defend and attack. So, I mean, you're losing this kind of a really high-class central midfielder who you can't just pick up in the market for free. And, you know, we bought him for like 5 mil. Mm. So, I mean, let's not even think about the talent that we've just got rid of for free, like Sanchez and, do you know what I'm saying? I mean, when you just consider just the actual management of the club, it is just really poor. So I don't even blame Emery.
I don't blame Emery at all. I agree. So having said all that, my thing is that I don't want Arsenal to qualify for Champions League next year because I don't feel and I don't trust that Arsenal will spend the requisite amount of money to get the players in to compete. And 10-2 still scars me.
The thing is, I sympathise with you, because over the past, when we were still getting top four, we weren't even really...
We weren't spending then.
The thing is, it wasn't even about spending. 11 versus 11 at the very highest level. Barcelona, maybe not even Bayern Munich, but Barcelona and maybe Madrid aside, you should always be competing. Even if you lose against the PSG, you know, 2-1 marginally, whatever, because the talent comes through, cool. But 11 versus 11 man at the highest level, these got to be there's got to be competition. And on that pitch, we just weren't competing. So I got to the point where I was like, why are we even here?
This is long.
So, I mean, I get what you're saying, but the truth is for the club stability, to attract the best players, you just need the glamour. But no, so, but I mean, it's irrational for us not to be there.
But hang on. So, Tim, sorry, I'll bring you guys in a second. This is my point. Arsenal fans say they want Champions League next year because you need the money, you need the players. But Arsenal have shown over 20 years they don't really bring in those players anyway. So my thing is, what's the point in having all that money, that Champions League money, if you're not going to spend it?
I don't.
Our
Champions League pedigree, without our Champions League pedigree, I don't think we would have bought in the Ozils, we wouldn't have bought in the Aubameyangs, we wouldn't have bought in the Lacazettes.
But they came in when we came out of the Champions League, ironically enough.
Well, but the thing is, we still had the
hangover. That's when we started spending
big
money.
We still had the hangover of the pedigree. That's the whole point of being a club who can say we regularly qualify for the Champions League. You can miss one season, okay. You miss 2, 3, 4 seasons and suddenly, like, you are no longer in that. You're not even on the coattails of that tier.
So all four of you, give me a couple of names, the calibre of player that you think Arsenal, if they get top four this year, win the Europa League, should and you think will go out and get to compete in the Champions League next year.
So I, like, personally, I think Arsenal need to change their transfer strategy a lot, because what we've been doing is, you're right, like, when we were out of the Champions League, we were scrabbling for, and I think Aubameyang's a brilliant signing, but we were scrabbling for players like that and Mkhitaryan because we're desperate to try and get back in. And we've bought a load of inconsistent players who look great on their day, but over a whole season just can't do it. I think Arsenal should start to look more towards like the early 20s area of the market. So look for potential a little bit more and try and get Emery to coach those players a little bit. So
But you can get those players without Champions League football.
No, the most talented players you can't. Look at these kids, like, you know, Jaden Sancho.
Let Tim finish.
I was going to use the example. Last January, we were in for Malcolm from Bordeaux. But because we got tied into this thing with Sanchez, where it's like, right, we don't want to lose face and lose Sanchez on a free, so let's do this, frankly, rubbish swap deal for Mkhitaryan that hasn't worked out for either club at all. So we did that to not lose face, whereas we could have picked up like a really good like 21-year-old talent like Malcolm, who then eventually went to Barcelona and has done absolutely nothing. And I think that deal would have been really, really good for Arsenal and for the player. Now he's at Barcelona and he's doing absolutely nothing and not playing. But I think that's the type of player that Arsenal should be bringing in. And then perhaps even selling on in a couple of years if he does well and going, right, he's 25, he's playing brilliantly, now Barcelona want him. This is kind of what Liverpool have done. And it's like, okay, all right, we'll sell him for twice what we picked him up for. And
he's got us to another level.
Exactly. And now we'll regenerate rather than picking up like 29-year-olds like Mkhitaryan on 200 grand a week. So that's much more of the area of the market that I'd be looking at personally.
Marvin, do you think Champions League football next year serves Arsenal long-term well? Or do you think they should get their house in order for a couple of years in the Europa League, get the crap players out, get some better players in, albeit maybe second shelf players, and build from there?
I'm on the fence with this, really. I think, generally speaking, I agree with everything Tim said. In terms of players to bring in, I think you need Champions League. If I'm Arsenal, Champions League helps me attract the names. Now, I get youth, but I think there's, to your point about people like Malcolm, I think there's talent who either want a move or aren't starting for respective clubs that could come in and do a good job. So I was thinking of someone like Umtiti at Barca, right, where he's not really starting anymore. He's still young. You desperately, desperately needed a good centre-back
but
for years.
But are Arsenal going to pay the 200 grand to get him?
200 grand a week?
A week, sorry, yeah.
I think you should.
But are we going to?
Well, I don't know.
This is
know.
My point. I would love Umtiti, but Arsenal are not going to do it.
Well, I think, Jude, like, it's funny because I'm listening to you speak and you articulated it earlier about Arsenal loserism, right? And then you've said you don't want Champions League.
No. Champions League is a long-term goal, but next year, most Arsenal fans I know say we need Champions League football because we need that money. So my response is, well, what's the point of having the money if we all know they're not going to spend it on Umtiti?
Well, the thing is, it's like I said to you before, right? I don't want Champions League because we don't deserve it. We've been such garbage. But I think this is the difference in the dynamic. Like, if it's there, I want it. Right, I want it. Like,
yeah, but you don't get smashed 10-2 by Bayern Munich. You don't get.
Well, George, that this is everything I'm talking about, the loserism. You've got to look at the bigger picture, right? Like, you weren't in Champions League, right? Emery's a new guy. Mm. He's actually done all right in Champions League, although he also got smashed by Barca, right? So maybe that's just not an Arsenal thing. But I think it's within reach and it's in touching distance for you. And I think a team like Arsenal, it's better to go and see if you can attract the talent. There's people coming to the end of contracts, etc., etc. And I think if you really want to kick on, I think you should build that on the foundation that you're a team that weren't in the, to Simeon's point, you weren't in the Champions League this year, but you've managed to find your way back, right? And I think you, I think actually you're sort of, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy with yourself because you talked about loserism. Everything you said has been super negative, right? Yeah. And I think actually,
the bigger picture, that's
I think under Emery, he's only had what, two windows so far. The Suarez signing was ridiculous, right? And I think you need to give him some more time, but I think that time will be better served if you're playing in Champions League football. If you get smashed 10-2, at least you're going to get a bigger wage, a bigger package out of it, and more TV money to invest because you have been. I don't know why. I literally, and you guys like Tim, Simeon, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't really know why the money's not there. Right? Like, you are the most
money is there. That's
you
the,
are
that's
the most
joke.
Expensive ticket in Europe, maybe in the world. Like, somebody called me and said, do you want a Man United ticket? And I said, how much? And they said, £162.
Whoa.
And I said, like that's Drake money. Do you know what I mean? Like, and he's had platinum selling albums. Like, you guys have it. Like, I can't get my head around when it was the summer and they were like, yeah, he's got like 25 mil to spend and stuff. I couldn't comprehend it. So there is, we talked about the United hierarchy, there's definitely something wrong there. I don't know if there's embezzlement going on
because they've spent it we broke our transfer record twice last year on two strikers in the same position. We spending like 350 grand a week on Ozil, 200 grand a week on Mkhitaryan. We spent it all trying to get back in the Champions League with these short-term buys. And we've got no resale value anywhere in the squad. Even someone like Danny Welbeck, who, you know, Liverpool got like 20 million for Danny Ings. We could have got like 20, 25 million for Danny Welbeck if we wanted to get rid of him.
That's the worst thing.
Hold that. Let me just bring in Josh now. Josh, what do you think this summer holds for Arsenal? What do you think the board should be? I mean, we don't know if it's going to be a champion. Let's assume they get into the Champions League.
Do you know what's thinking about this? I feel like Arsenal and United have the same problems. But even though the expectations are different, they have the same problems. They do the same stupid things at the moment, what I can see.
I think they're two different stupid things. But
no, they do say stupid things. They sign players because they're desperate. Mm. And they sign players at the wrong age, give them expensive contracts, and they can't get them off their books. We've got Sanchez. You can't get Ozil off your books. Mm. We can't get Sanchez off our books. We've got Matic now. You've got Mkhitaryan. Like, players at the wrong age, coming like on expensive contracts, you can't sell them because the selling club's not going to want to give them that wage, and then you're stuck with them. Like, I feel like we're going to have that issue with Sanchez at the moment.
And more importantly, not delivering. I wouldn't mind them getting big contracts being old if they were delivering.
But here's the thing, right? And this is what the difference between Arsenal and Man United is, that Man United have the cash and Arsenal don't seem to have the cash or don't seem to want to spend the cash even if they have it. I don't know what the situation is. But you don't have to spend big money to be successful. And there are some clubs that Arsenal could look at. And Tim made the point about changing your transfer strategy to say, okay, if we don't have money, I'm not going to spend 50 million on Aubameyang when he's 29. Why am I going to do that for? Mm. We don't have the cash. So why don't I go and look at, I don't know, another young striker, like a Jokovic or Piatek or someone like that, who's going to cost me 30 million euros. He might bang for a couple of years and I can sell him on for double the profit or triple the profit, right? If you look at Dortmund or if you look at RB Leipzig, right, Dortmund is a competitive club. Mm. Like, they qualify for the Champions League, they're competitive. They might not obviously buy in and win the league most of the times, right? But they're competitive, they compete, right? And so, but they don't spend 100 million pounds or 50, even 50 million. They hardly even spend 30 million on a single player, right? They go and look for young talents and then they try to develop them. Well, there's plenty of young, like Arsenal could do the same
the
thing.
The irony is that we brought in the guy from Dortmund to do that, and now we're not even doing that. I mean, that's the joke to the management. That's why you can't. I can't take the club seriously. How are you going to lose Wilshere, Welbeck, Sanchez, and Ramsey all for free? At one point, all of those players collectively, at their peak value, would have been bringing in 300 mil.
Yeah.
So but, I mean, this I can't take the club seriously until they sort out the management at boardroom level.
But you know what? Not that I want to back Arsenal here, but Josh, I think you mentioned it many moons ago. You made me think about it, but I think that's just the nature of the game now. Players are running their contracts down. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think.
Wenger did say this, to be fair, about a year and a half ago.
I don't think it's an Arsenal thing here. You look at Gundogan at City, he's got a year left. Herrera looks like he signed for PSG. I think that just is the nature of the game. Unless you are signing them to a new five-year deal every year, eventually it comes to a point
what Spurs are doing.
Yeah,
basically.
Eventually it comes to a point where there's 2 years left on the deal. They're thinking, I'm not starting, or this club isn't going anymore, or I can get paid elsewhere. And I think the crux of it is, if you're not costing that buying club money, then those wages are going to be very tasty. Very, very tasty. So I take your point, but I don't think that's an Arsenal management thing.
I mean no, for Welbeck, for Ramsey, for Wilshere and for Sanchez, that is definitely an Arsenal management thing. Yeah. We could have sold this guy for 60 mil to City.
Yeah.
We literally had the money on the table.
I take that point, but like Ramsey, for instance, I think he was just going to run it down.
No, not 2 years ago.
I think he was going to run it down. And I think Sanchez is different, because I actually think Sanchez just wanted to be at a better club.
Nah.
You know what I mean? Like, the thing is, the bit that I'm jealous about with Arsenal is the lure of London, right? Like, London is where it all happens. Like, if my company said to me tomorrow, are you moving to Manchester?
You're pissed.
or Leeds or whatever, right? Like, I'm going to be like, okay, well, here's my resignation. Like, you got to put something behind that as well. So I take your point. They could have signed them up or sold them, but I do think football is changing to a point where people are willing to
it
run
is,
it
but
down.
All of those players Simeon mentioned,
could have
Arsenal
been sold
had a chance
them.
To sell them, and they didn't.
But I think that was an ego thing, right, where they thought they could
sign. And I feel like United are the same.
Final point on Arsenal, Tim. On the pitch, last time you were on, you were talking about the away form, and you were saying that last year away form was awful. And I asked you at the start of the season, how can Arsenal get into a top four spot? And you said, if they can even by 10% improve on their away form, not even improve it, just 10%, they would. It's not been that much better this season, but we're seeing that in the last two away games alone, if we'd have got even 4 points from those two games, Arsenal would be probably a top four team and going to Champions League football. Why do you think Arsenal's away form is so poor?
My theory is on it that when you watch Arsenal play and why there's such a disparity between home and away, it's to do with like the rhythm of the game. At home, Arsenal dominate the game because teams just come and sit off them. And even if the game's difficult, the pattern of the game doesn't change. It's kind of attack v defence. But away from home, even when we go, we look terrible. We look all right away from home when it's 0-0. Once there's a goal either side, even if we go 1-0 up, we look terrible, because that is when the home team goes, right, we've got to do something now. So we're going to change the rhythm of the game. We're going to put some long balls in. Whenever the pattern of the game changes, Arsenal cannot handle it. They have no answer. They look fine against Wolves at 0-0. Second they went 1-0 down, game over. Leicester looked kind of...
okay.
Yeah, okay-ish. Like, not great, but kind of had the game at arm's length. Maitland-Niles goes off, bang, gone. And this happens time and time again, whereas that doesn't happen at home. Even if we go a goal down at home, the pattern of the game still doesn't change. The other team just defends and we attack.
Could you apply that, though, to, say, Tottenham, for example? At home, they probably have the lion's share of the ball. And so why is their away form significantly better than our form?
I think it is a bit of a mentality thing. We just don't have enough players who...
They're like, spineless, aren't they? Let's say it.
Yeah.
They haven't got the leadership. The days
exactly.
of... Same with us. You look at the Vieiras, the Petites. Those sorts of personalities few and far between. I think City still got a version of it with the likes of Fernandinho. As crap as I think he is, Jordan Henderson
has got a bit of a backbone to him. Ronaldo's very talented. I think a lot of it comes down to having a spine who not only can tear shreds off someone in the dressing room to say they're shit, but will, you know, will put an orange tackle in on someone just to stamp their authority. And I just feel like Arsenal have lacked a bit of leadership through. I think Koscielny was the closest you had early days, and he sort of faded. But if you look through the spine of that team, from centre back to striker, you've got people that get their hair done every Saturday.
Cool. Okay, so I think both clubs have got a massive job ahead of them this season. It'll be interesting to see what moves are being made. Let's get into some Everton chat now, and to do so, let's welcome to the show Dave from the Blue Room. Dave, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. How are you?
We're well, mate. We're all good. So you guys have been on a bit of a decent run of form of late, much better than the last time we spoke. Yeah. What's been happening to cause this change of form?
Yeah, really interesting. It's almost like the season's been defined by two Merseyside derbies, really. You know, you look at the first half when we spoke last time, the last minute howler from Jordan Pickford just sent us on this terrible run which spiralled out of control and resulted in many people calling for Marco Silva's head. And then the second one, which was a revitalising 0-0 draw at Goodison, which at this moment in time looks like it may be the result that cost Liverpool the title. So that's sort of got everybody's smiles back at Goodison. And then the momentum's carried on from there, really. We've started keeping clean sheets, with the exception of, well, two that come to mind, Newcastle away, where Jordan Pickford basically decided to become a pantomime villain. And then 2-0 defeat at Fulham, which was inexplicable, really, after they lost 9 on the bounce. And then, you know, you look at the home games, Arsenal, Chelsea, United, clean sheets pretty much wiped the floor with United and Arsenal. And all of a sudden, we're looking forward to the summer again now, seeing what Marco Silva and Marcel Brands can do in the transfer market. Still got to ship out a lot of players, but yeah, certainly looking a lot more positive. I think the key to it has been the clean sheets, but also, you know, the form of Idrissa Gueye. And it's interesting because he wanted to get out of the club back in January to go to PSG. Didn't get that move. We all expected him to down tools. And now he's just kicked on and he's taken his game to another level. So now it's a question of, you know, not when he's going to leave, but whether we can keep hold of him.
And of those three games you just mentioned there, the United win and the Arsenal and Chelsea one, which did you enjoy the most?
I'd probably say the Arsenal one, to be honest with you, because the United one, and you guys will have a lot of thoughts on this. I don't think the wider media sort of give us credit for beating United 4-0, because it was pretty much all about how they sort of self-destructed and how poor De Gea was and the players sort of not playing for Solskjaer again and big question about Pogba. Whereas the Arsenal one was as comprehensive as you get, with it only being 1-0. We absolutely battered Arsenal and should have scored at least 3 or 4. It probably should have been the result the United one was, to be honest. But to a man, everyone that day, it felt like we had Everton back, in, to sound a little bit too cheesy. It felt like it was the perfect sort of afternoon. It was sunny day at Goodison. We've got a fan group now called the Originals, who are trying to inject a new atmosphere into Goodison, much the same way that you see at the likes of Palace and, you know, other clubs who are trying to have designated singing sections. We've got one of them now, and they really started to up the game in terms of generating an atmosphere in the Gladys Street, and everyone was on song that day. It was just a really good afternoon, and it felt like that was a real blueprint for us going forward.
Do you want European football next year, Dave? Because everyone often talks about how it can be a hindrance for teams that don't have the biggest of squads. But, you know, I mean, you can't not win games because you don't want to get... As a fan, would you rather be in the Europa League next year and you'll deal with the balancing act of the league and the Europa League?
I'm probably in a minority here, but I wouldn't right now, considering the work we've got to do with the squad. I mean, a lot of people forget, certainly non-Evertonians will forget anyway, that we've got about 15, 16 players out on loan who we desperately need to get off the wage bill because they're just soaking up a lot of our cash. That needs to be rectified. They either need to move on or go out on loan again. The chairman said that, the owner said that he's not going to bankroll the club as he previously has done by just throwing money about. So, you know, we need to control our finances a little bit more shrewdly in the summer, which I think means we need a lot of work basically just getting us back to an even keel in the Premier League. You know, Europa League football, it's a taboo subject in our country. I know abroad they appreciate it a lot more, and I wish we did as well, but in this particular instance, in regards to Everton, I think that it could be a hindrance to the sort of progress we're trying to make in the Premier League. You know, it's like half a season's worth of games. You have to come back in July. From a fan perspective, purely selfishly, a fan who goes to the game, I'd love the away trips. I love going to Europe and different places that we've never been to. I think it's great to have that experience. But from a selfish point of view and in terms of the squad, the team and the future, I think we could actually do without it. So I'm probably leaning towards not wanting European football while still sort of recognising its importance.
And just finally, Dave, I mean, the battle for that seventh place between yourself, Leicester and Wolves, and even well, Watford as well, is looking quite interesting. Of the four clubs, who would you say has got the best 11 when everybody's fit?
Oh, that's a really good question. I mean, I really like what Wolves have done this season. Big fan of Nuno. Ironically, I think we were linked to them when before we got Sam Allardyce in. What a comparison that is, by the way. Nuno Santo with Sam Allardyce. I'd probably side with Leicester, to be fair. And I actually think they've made a really good appointment in getting Brendan Rodgers in. You know, you look at some of the young midfielders, they've got Maddison, Chowdhury, who could barely get in the squad. You've got Ndidi, Chilwell at left-back. You've still got Vardy doing the business up front. So I think they've got the nucleus of a really, really good squad, Leicester. And I think they could do something next season, heading towards the top six. Wolves, like I said, as well, really good. But I'd probably just about go with Leicester and have ourselves somewhere around maybe in third out of those four with Wolves just in front of us as well.
I hear you. Dave, cheers for coming on, man. Cheers for your time, mate.
No problem, guys.
Thank you very much. Cheers, pal.
Bye-bye.
Right, let's move on. Let's talk about Portuguese football, guys. It's been obviously a massive influence on football for many, many, many years. And we did Dutch football last week, and a kind of friend of mine that we said you should do something on Portuguese influence on the game. Now, I know that you're a man, Tim, that covers a lot of Brazilian football. Mm. That's your thing. I'll start with the question, what is slash was Portugal's influence on modern day football?
It's actually, I hadn't really thought about this before until you kind of mentioned it a couple of days ago, and you think about some of like the biggest figures in the modern game. Jose Mourinho winning the European Cup with Porto. Then you've got Jorge Mendes, you know, who's probably the most influential agent, you know, possibly ever. And you look at a club like Wolves, where he's kind of controlling almost like a whole football club at the moment, and using it as a platform for a lot of his players. But, you know, the amount of business he's done. And then you look at someone like Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, absolute generation-defining talent. And then you look at, you know, Porto won the Champions League 15 years ago, which, all right, 15 years ago is not recent, but, you know, you think that's like in the modern era. And then you look at the fact that Portugal won Euro 2016 as well, which, like, for quite a medium-sized, like, football country and football culture...
That's a lot of achievements.
It's massive. And then you look at, like, the Premier League, and you've got Marco Silva in there. You've got Nuno, you know, at Wolves doing a really, really good job. And, yeah, I hadn't really thought about it before. And then you think, like, this kind of quite moderate football country, and, like, nobody would look at, like, the Portuguese League as, like... You know,
elite,
anything
really
elite or aspirational, but they're just, I think, mainly through Mourinho and Mendes, they're just having this, and actually what Mendes is doing at Wolves, I think, is and what Wolves are doing rather is really, really interesting. And I know it's been quite controversial, but I think they've been really, really smart because they recognise how the game's changed, and they've been like, well, look, unless we get an absolute like billionaire, We're not getting into the top six.
They're
how
seeing
do we
every
get
loophole
seventh?
And they're kind of exploiting it without crossing the line
exactly.
and breaking rules.
They're going, how do we get seventh? Well, who's got all the players? This guy's got all the players and he can use us and we can use him. And Wolves and Watford, actually, the way they're managed is so, so smart for modern football. But, yeah, you look at like some of those characters, Mendes and Mourinho, just like moving chess pieces all over modern football.
I was hoping to get Josh, a Portuguese expert, football expert, on the show, but he wasn't able to. Wasn't able to make it in the end.
So you're the next best.
I say that because I was going to ask him, which I'm going to ask you, and this is a hard question, but why is it that Portugal struggle to produce good strikers?
Do you know what?
And I accept Eusebio is obviously
no, but it's a really good question. You know, it's a really good question because I've actually thought about this before, and I don't have an answer for you,
though. Okay, great. But
that's because you're not the expert.
But I thought about this before because there was one point where Portugal have a lot of good attacking midfielders, and then that's just rubbish strikers.
Just poor letter in Nuno Gomes, isn't it?
Poor strikers. And I always, it's baffled me. I think, like, these guys have really, really talented footballers, central midfielders, wingers, great technique. Maybe it's because everybody wants to be Luis Figo.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, because if you think about the players might have looked up to at that kind of era of football, Luis Figo is probably like the best player that they plays for Real Madrid, played for Barcelona, captain of the Portuguese national team.
And just sick generally.
Yeah, and a sick player. So maybe it's had that kind of influence. But even when you look at players now, I think that there's that guy at Benfica, João Felix, and he looks up to Cristiano Ronaldo, who's also half a striker.
He's become really a striker now, but
I can't really. It's really a strange thing because they even have really good centre backs, really good goalkeepers, excellent fullbacks, attacking fullbacks, really really good central midfielders, but absolute trash strikers. When you talk about trash, real rubbish,
awful.
I don't understand.
Marvin, Jose Mourinho and Ronaldo are the only two individuals to have won titles in Serie A, England and Spain. And I don't know if there's anything to deduce from that because they're both Portuguese, or is that just a coincidence, do you think? It's a bit of a random question, but...
I think it's partly coincidence. I feel like a good Jose and a good Ronaldo come along once in a generation, right? Mm. And I think it's just so happened that they're Portuguese, right? I think, actually, it's funny, to Tim's point, when I started thinking about Portuguese football, I was like, what a strange question. And then I started thinking about...
When I sent it to you?
Yeah. Okay. And then I started thinking about myself as a kid when... My mum and dad thought Sky was a waste of money. So the only football I really watched was Serie A with the Gazzetta on Channel 4. Mm-hmm. And then I started thinking of the likes of
Rui Costa
mm-hmm. even and people even in our league, Carvalho, Couto, who I thought, wow, actually, now I see what George's talking about. Because some of them sort of defined the positions they played in. I thought... Rui Costa and Batistuta at Fiorentina was a wonderful, beautiful combination, mm-hmm. right? And I think the problem for Portugal maybe, and people might shoot me down, so please do if you feel that way. But
yeah.
I feel like clearly the talent is in that country, but what wasn't there is the money. So then what happens is, once you get to a certain level, it's just like a feasting ground for the Spanish, Italian and English clubs to come and poach the talent. And that is exactly what happened with Ronaldo and Jose, to your point, right? They reach a point. I mean, I've read so many different accounts of how United managed to get Ronaldo under everyone's noses. And I mean, Carlos Queiroz was highly involved in it. But more importantly, we just played Sporting in a friendly. And he ran rings around like John O'Shea. I mean in hindsight, yeah. We're talking, but I feel as though that actually it's produced some of the best talent. Figo's obviously, I mean, Victor Baier as a goalkeeper was solid, right?
So let me pause you there and move on to Simeon. Yeah. I'm going to just, the three main teams in Portugal, I've just got a list of players that they've produced over the last 15 years. Porto have produced Ricardo Carvalho, Ruben Neves, Victor Baier, Bruno Alves, Postiga, Fernando Couto, Deco, Alexandro, Pepe, Otamendi, Danilo, Hulk, Jackson Martinez, James Rodriguez, Falcao, Pereira, Basingua, Morelli, Helton. That's just Porto. Benfica, Andre Gomes.
Producers didn't come through the youth.
These are lists of people that they have brought through.
Okay.
They've
not all through the youth.
Not all through, but they've brought through.
We'll get that. Yeah. Anyway.
Benfica, Andre Gomes, Bernardo Silva, Cancelo, Renato Sanchez. I can never pronounce the guy's name. You know him. Goncalo Guedes.
Yeah, Guedes. Yeah.
Guedes, okay. Yeah. Valesso, Eusebio, Edison, Oblak, Lindelof, Semedo, Contral, David Luiz, Garay, Matic, Witzel, Di Maria, Rodrigo, Nolito, Pereira. And then finally Sporting, Ronaldo, Figo, João Moutinho, Quaresma, Rui Patricio, Nani, Eric Dier, Cedric, José Fonte, João Mário, André Gomes. do you think as football fans we don't fully appreciate their contribution to our game? We think of the Spanish, we think of the Dutch, we think of the Germans, we think of the Italians. Do you think they get overlooked in some of their output of players that have made a impact on the game in the last 20 years?
I mean, and I don't think I'm the most qualified person to answer this. I mean, my view is that the clubs that you've mentioned are massive European clubs playing in a league which is not considered to be a massive league. Mm. So they have like a kind of
monopoly on the talent.
They have a monopoly on talent. They also have heritage status. So I feel like some of those players you mentioned are not even necessarily Portuguese. Do you know what I'm saying?
No. But they.
But the thing is, you get the call from Benfica. I know Benfica. That's a big name. Yeah, man. I wanna do a trial with Benfica. My agent takes you to Benfica over, I don't know, another club who maybe might have more money, but they're playing in a richer league, maybe prestige. A German league or an English league. But actually, Benfica, Sporting, you know the players that have come through there. It has that tradition, and so much of football is like a very much a kind of, it's a heritage sport where you play gives you pride. So I feel like that the strength of those clubs alone gives them an ability to bring players through who are not planning to play there forever, but just see it as like a way to
a way to come through.
Mm. And I think there are some clubs that a lot of young talent who know that they're talent think of, yeah, that's a good place to go and play briefly. I'll get a platform, might get some Champions League exposure, some European exposure. It's guaranteed, and then I can come through to a much bigger club.
Tim, I asked on the show last week, and again, this was a question to our who was going to be our expert on the show. So you're the next best thing. But I was going to ask him. Well, I asked the Dutch guy last week we had on. Do the Ajax in Holland accept now that their job and success for them is developing and investing small amounts of money in their youth academy and young players, but then selling them on at 17, 18, 19 for massive money? Then Ajax probably aren't going to win the Champions League. It's unlikely. It could happen, but it's unlikely. They're not going to do anything big as a club. But what they do deem success is if we can sell a De Jong and De Ligt for 90 million to 100, that's success for us. Do you think a lot of those clubs, as Portuguese clubs, think the same thing now? That it's unlikely Porto will win another Champions League anytime soon. But as long as they can bring through one of those players and get a big fee, that's kind of what they now accept their role in the football chain is.
Yeah. I think it's been like that for a while. And what they've got actually kind of going for them is, like, for South American talent, Portugal's it's a perfect, like, step league to go to when it's like, well, if I go straight to the Premier League or La Liga, I'm going to sit on the bench. Whereas I go to Benfica, like you say, I play in the Champions League a bit. And actually, Shakhtar have muscled in on Porto's territory here a bit because they had a big strategy around Brazilians. Brazilians tend to go to Porto and Benfica. The language is the same. The culture's very similar. The weather's very similar. The good thing as well, and it's easy to get a visa, so they have like a bit of a monopoly in South American talent. But then when you get like good Portuguese talent who are, you know, in their homeland, it's fairly easy for them to move on to Spain and to Italy. Again, the language is very similar. Portuguese and Italian, very similar languages. Portugal and Spain, very similar languages, very similar climate. And you've got, like, in Portugal, there's like more of a diaspora. There's more of like a culture of wanting to move on, to aspire, to emigrate, not just in football. Mm. Like, a lot of Portuguese people, you know, will get to a certain level in any industry and then think, right, I want to go and live in Spain or something like that. And it's the same in football. So it's a little section on a conveyor belt, basically, and they know where they are. And it's like, we'll get good young Brazilian talent coming here. Yeah, and then when you know, you were talking about London earlier, Lisbon's a nice place to live. Lisbon's beautiful city. So Benfica and Sporting have got like a big advantage there. Come and live in Lisbon for a couple of years. You'll play some Champions League, you'll win some league titles, and then someone from the Premier League or Spain will have eyes on you. You'll be able to move there, particularly if it's Spain or Italy. You'll learn the language much more quickly. You'll like the food. Mm. England, that's less of a guarantee. Yeah. But the money's probably better.
Yeah.
So it knows where it, like Portugal, I think, knows where it is.
Marvin, it's been mentioned a lot this season that Wolves' record against the top six teams is really, really impressive. And then I kind of clocked about a week ago that Everton had have a really good record against, or they mentioned earlier on, they've beaten Arsenal, Chelsea and United in the space of a month, and drew Liverpool in that period as well. And the coincidence, the link between those two clubs, they both had Portuguese managers, as Tim mentioned earlier on.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, is this, I kind of was thinking about this late at night, it's a mad one. Is there a link, do you think, to the fact those two teams, those two managers are very good at getting results against big clubs because they have to be more reactive? And if so, do you think Mourinho was maybe, whose generation before them, they've learned from his way, which is, that's how he made his name, being a guy that knows how to be a bastard against the bigger teams and finding a way to react mm-hmm. against the bigger teams?
Yeah, I mean...
Is that a leap?
The word reactive is a bit weird because I feel like Wolves have a way of playing.
They do. They
and
do.
They play that way. I think the weird thing for me, and it's like Everton will pack United out 4-0 and then lose to like Fulham. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. So I do sometimes wonder if the energy from the managers is different on games that they're expected to win versus games that they are expected to lose. And I do. I think I'm not sure about Santos, the Wolves manager, but there's something about Silva that says that he's a me sort of man. And if you look at the way he's gone about his career thus far, he's always looked for the next step. And I think Everton's a bit different because the next step would probably be a top six team, and nobody wants Silver yet. I mean, if he won like an FA Cup and got him Champions League football, that might be something different. But I do generally feel that with his style of things, he's like, a Man United victory make me look really good. You know what I mean? An Arsenal victory makes me look really good. And then I think, and I'm really speculating here, but the level of preparation and the meticulous planning to counteract all of the forces they're playing against of that big club, I think will be different versus a Fulham. I think a Fulham, it's like, we should go out and beat these guys. You know what I mean? Like, they've got Mitrovic and, you know, we can shackle him. But I think with Man United, we stop Pogba playing here, do this and that. Because I just don't get how you, as Everton, you can play that well and then lose to
Fulham. But I guess what I'm asking is, do you feel that those two in particular might have seen Jose as the blueprint of how to manage?
I don't think Wolves are looking at Jose.
No, not Wolves. I mean, Espirito Santos in particular. Do you think they look to him as a massive figure in Portugal?
No? I don't see it. I feel like everyone's out for themselves. And actually, Jose's style of play, or Jose's approach to modern-day football, has been proven to be archaic, right?
So it is now, but it wasn't 10 years ago.
It wasn't 10 years ago, but I think we're dealing with the here and now, right? I feel like I don't think either of those teams are particularly defensive-minded, and that's kind of what Jose created. Is like, if I can't beat them attacking, then I'm going to stifle the life out of them. Okay. And I don't think either of them do that.
Okay.
But I do think the Wolves manager, I think, are extremely good as a unit. It's not just, you know, Jota and Jimenez or whatever. Like, that whole back line, it's a fantasy football player's, like, dream, right? Yeah, They're cheap as chips. And they get clean sheets. I think Patricio, Gabe was saying on a pod a few weeks ago, he'd pick him in his fantasy football team. Like, it's meticulous in terms of how cohesive they are. Mm. I actually think Everton, I really can't call it. Like, they could finish 13th next year, or they could finish in the top four. Like, you really don't know what Silva's going to do. But what I do guarantee is, if someone came knocking on Silva's door tomorrow, he's gone. And that's probably a bit Jose-like at his point. Because Jose, like, once he won it at Porto,
it was
the best-kept secret that he's now going to get a big job. And obviously, Roman's snapped him up, sort of thing.
How are Portugal? Does anyone know how they've been doing since they won the Euros a couple of years back? Have they kicked on since then?
Not really.
But no one ever does, though, do they?
No. But a lot of it's... So Ronaldo hasn't played a lot of games for them as much as he has. So it's almost like...
They've got a lot of talent come through. So maybe it's only a couple of years. But yeah, that... Do you know what the interesting thing is Tim made a point about the access to South American talent and Portuguese football knowing its place. If you look at Benfica, they've become very, very... good at fleecing clubs, like
they get good fees in.
Like they have a really big hype machine. Every single summer, there's a player that gets hyped out of Benfica. Renato Sanchez was the one. Like,
agreed.
This year, it's like it's João Felix and the centre mid as well, Rui. Ruiz or something like
so
that.
So you don't think Joao Felix is worthy of
No,
the
I
hype?
Think he's good. But okay. What I'm saying is that
they do a good
always,
job of PRing.
They push one guy. It's like a record label having that one big artist, right?
Because they know they're going to sell him in the summer.
Yeah.
So they hype that player up. And obviously Mendes is behind the whole thing, right, as the agent.
And I saw like there was a story about him where he said something like, he loves being a footballer because he's getting so much sex or something like that.
Yeah, yeah,
like
that
sort of story you never see, but like they were like, oh, if he wants to say it, he can say it. Like, it's clearly, there is, I think you're right. I think there is a PR machine. Yeah. And I think it's laziness of the scouts of the bigger clubs where rather than put people in South America and do that, they'll wait, see if the player cuts
they'll
the mustard, and then they'll pay, you know, 50 times more than what they would.
Before, like, it used to work because... Yeah. In the Premier League, you go to Portugal and you pick up a player for cheap. I think they've cottoned on to that.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, we're not having that.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to charge you, like, if you want this player, 60 million euros.
Mm.
Like, buyout clause, pay it.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Like, because they quoted 120 million for João Felix.
Yeah.
Who, just briefly in a word, who thinks that Bernardo Silva could go on to be the best attacking midfielder in the league in the next 3 or 4 years?
How old is he?
Tough.
23, 24.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I mean?
Tough.
Man, like Sterling's still there.
You and your Sterling thing.
I was riding for Sterling before he had this season. Pay me my respects.
So don't forget the socials. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter as well.
You see, you crossed the question to everyone else. Didn't even get asked.
We've run out of time. Tim Tish coming on the pod this week. Also, Simeon, Josh, and Marvin as well. Don't forget, as I said there, the socials. We're on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We're also on iTunes and Spotify as well. Until next week. Peace.